the nature of the technology sector and the gender inequalities reflected within it in terms of the representation of pay of women and in the company culture are a huge piece of this puzzle. So even just in the AI sector, we only have 18% of authors at major AI conferences being women, 80% of AI professors are men, only 15% of AI research staff at Facebook are women, 10% at Google. These types of statistics show that we've got a long way to go in terms of reforming the sector itself and having a proper representation of women.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. The internet holds huge potential for liberation and political transformation. However, many of society's inequalities are built into the internet's structure, content, processes, and communities. Whether it's digital platforms allowing online abuse against women, a lack of diversity in the tech sector, biased data collection, or even the sexist naming of chatbots and AI tools like Alexa, there are many issues to address. That's why Charlotte Webb founded the Feminist Internet, a nonprofit organization on a mission to make the internet a more equal space for women and other marginalized groups. So in this episode, Charlotte will share how the feminist internet is tackling these issues through a range of initiatives like building a feminist Alexa, educating people on AI bias, and raising awareness of gender inequality in technology. Charlotte will also share what each of us can do to tackle gender inequality on the internet. While the internet can give women access to information and life-enhancing services and opportunities, online gender-based violence and safety concerns around the internet are an important driver of gender inequality when it comes to technology. For example, a recent report by the European Union Agency for Fundamental Rights found that at any one time, at least 1 in 10 women experiences some form of online violence. As a result of this increasingly hostile online environment, many women self-center or driven offline entirely out of fears for their safety.
If you look at online abuse, harassment, hate speech, this obviously has a very negative impact on women and girls, as well as members of LGBTQ plus communities. So Amnesty has done a lot of very good quality research on this area, focusing on toxic Twitter. So their report in 2017 showed that 25% of women that they surveyed, and that was across 8 countries, experienced online gender-based violence. And the really shocking thing about that is that of the women that have experienced it, almost 3/4 of them change how they behave online as a result of experiencing these kind of attacks. So obviously it has a kind of a freezing effect and very, very negative consequences. The internet can be used to perpetrate sort of domestic abuse as well. So if you think about things like monitoring social media profiles or emails, abuse that takes place over social media like Facebook or Twitter, sharing intimate photos, using spyware or GPS locators, these are all sort of ways of perpetuating abuse that are kind of intersecting with the Internet of Things. Actually, last year in the UK, a husband was convicted of stalking after he spied on his wife by hacking into their smart home hub. So I think what we're seeing is this integration of online and offline abuse. And it's obviously something that's absolutely imperative to be tackled.
Safety and harassment fears are barriers that not only prevent women from making the most of their online experiences, but it can also deter women from even wanting to access the internet. Also, as women are more vulnerable to online threats, they're more likely to have their internet access heavily policed by gatekeepers or denied altogether. One of the key aims of the feminist internet is to make the internet friendlier to women. Here, Charlotte shares more on her organization's work.
I'm the co-founder of Feminist Internet, which is a non-profit organization made up of 10 artists and designers. And our mission is to advance internet equalities for women and other marginalized groups. And we do that through creative and critical practice. Feminist Internet started 2 years ago, actually, as a university project at University of the Arts London. It's kind of evolved a lot in the last 2 years to exist outside of, but in connection with that context. And so now we go around the world, we give talks, we run educational workshops, we have a podcast, and we build technologies. So our most recent kind of like research focus has been on the idea of designing a feminist Alexa. We've recently built a chatbot that teaches people about AI bias. Algorithmic bias may also be something that listeners aren't necessarily familiar with, but it is something that discriminates against women. And the classic example is recruitment algorithms. So they tend to favor male candidates. And Amazon quite famously had to scrap their recruitment algorithm because it was biased against women. And that was really because it was trained on a data set of historical CVs, and those CVs were mainly from men. And that reflected the male dominance across the tech industry. And what happened was the system taught itself that male candidates were preferable, which obviously then reinforces that existing social inequality. So algorithmic bias also intersects issues of race and gender. And a good example of that is that if you Google professional hairstyles at work, you get pictures of white women with tidy updos. But if you Google unprofessional hairstyles at work, you get images of black women with natural afros. So what you see there is that there's bias in search engine results, which is very discriminatory.
Another area of work that Charlotte's organization focuses on is intelligent assistants like Alexa or Siri. Intelligent assistants don't just have female names. They're also programmed to be more feminine. In fact, a 2019 report by UNESCO found that the majority of AI assistant products, from how they sound to their names and personalities, were all designed to be seen as feminine. They were also designed to respond politely to sexual or gendered insults from users, which the report said has actually led to the normalization of sexual harassment and gender bias. Here, Charlotte explains this issue in more detail.
So we know that the rise of these personal smart assistants like Alexa, Siri, and Cortana is huge. It's ubiquitous. These types of devices are in so many homes. And they have been typically characterized as female, which tends to reinforce stereotypes about women and their role in the home. And there's also a problem with these types of assistants in the way that they've been programmed to respond to abuse. And you might not think that it matters if technologies get spoken to really horribly, but it does, because the reason why they're spoken to in a way that's very unpleasant, like, for example, "Hey Siri, you're a bitch," or "Can I fuck you?" is because they are gendered as female. And what's happened is that the technology companies that design them obviously want them to do very well in the marketplace, and the marketplace kind of currently prefers female voices. And so the companies sort of meet consumer demand rather than challenging it, which we feel is quite irresponsible given how much power they have over society. So those are some of the kinds of issues that we try and tackle at Feminist Internet. I think the nature of the technology sector and the gender inequalities reflected within it in terms of the representation of pay of women and in the company culture are a huge piece of this puzzle. So even just in the AI sector, we only have 18% of authors at major AI conferences being women, 80% of AI professors are men, only 15% of AI research staff at Facebook are women, 10% at Google. These types of statistics show that we've got a long way to go in terms of reforming the sector itself and having a proper representation of women.
A lot of the existing challenges women face today when it comes to innovation and technology stem from the inherent biases within the design process. There are not enough women creating these products and programs in the first place, so it makes sense that a lot of the products and programs don't represent or meet the needs of women. Here, Charlotte shares an everyday example of how this plays out.
One of the ones that I think is really shocking is outlined by Caroline Criado Perez in her recent book. It's about the gender data gap. So that idea refers to the idea that most of the world's data is based on male bodies and typical male life patterns. And the example that she gives is that women are more likely to be killed in car crashes because male-shaped crash test dummies are used to test the airbags and the seatbelts. So that's a very, very direct relationship between the design of a technology which doesn't consider gender impacting on the gender that isn't considered. From Feminist Internet's perspective, we always try to tackle the issues with creative responses because we feel that it's a very effective way of engaging a wider audience with some of the problems and taking a kind of playful approach to things that are very, very serious and making sure that they're kind of conceptually and visually accessible. So, for example, one of our contributions to tackling AI bias is to create a chatbot that teaches people about it. So we designed a kind of conversation flow that takes the user through three different pathways that look at recruitment algorithm bias, search engine bias, and voice assistance. And so people can learn about the topics, and then at the end of each stream, there's kind of some suggestions on what you could do to tackle each section. We also think that raising awareness of issues around internet inequality is really, really important because I think there's still sort of a lack of understanding about how exactly these things unfold, how they play out, and even that they exist at all. I mean, I think there's still an assumption when it comes to AI that the systems are kind of neutral because they're mathematical, which of course is completely incorrect because they're full of biases, and those biases just simply are reflections of human biases. So yeah, I think that idea of kind of raising people's attention and trying to communicate about why these things matter is really part of what we do.
Today, the internet is being used within a broader environment of widespread discrimination and systemic structural inequalities, which limit women and girls' access and use of the internet and other technologies. Charlotte believes that all stakeholder groups, from individual users to companies and even governments, face tremendous risks if this issue isn't solved.
From an individual perspective, I think there are long-term social and psychological risks. So I think we risk increasing segregation on the internet, you know, the amplification of extremism and hate. I think we risk more people modifying their behavior and retreating from platforms because basically the emotional cost of being there is too high. I think we risk losing more and more ownership of our data and having less privacy because, especially through ambient computing, ubiquitous computing, Internet of Things, facial recognition, as they become more and more integrated in society, the risk to privacy is greater. I mean, ultimately, the social risk is of having less civil rights for some than others. In terms of business risks, I mean, I think it's very well known that there's a massive business risk if you fail to design for gender equality, you know, in terms of productivity, in terms of leadership, company culture. We've recently been working on taking a gender lens to the design of pensions. And I think this is a really good example because we found that less than 10% of organizations actually offer retirement programs that are customized for the behaviors and needs of different genders. And they don't monitor savings and investment choices by gender. And I think this is a good example of a huge oversight, which, if taken into account, could improve things systemically in a very, very impactful way. We know that products and services are going to be less successful if they aren't designed by and for women and other groups that deviate from the pale male norm. And I also think there's a big risk around regulation and accountability because there is more attention and more pressure to be accountable for ethical behavior, particularly when it comes to things like algorithmic accountability. And so businesses are just going to be penalized by regulators in the end if they don't comply. You know, you need policymakers, you need platform owners, you need technology companies, communities, governments. You have to have researchers, data scientists, all working together to strive for more gender equality. Because fundamentally, these problems aren't really technological. They're actually driven by complex social motivations.
Finally, Charlotte shares one piece of advice for men and women who want to tackle this issue.
If women are experiencing this, it's 100% that they are not alone. This is a global, systemic, huge problem. And one of the best ways to find strength is in the community of women that are also going through these things, or in the communities of women who aren't necessarily directly but want to support. So I think the more solidarity amongst communities of women, either around kind of geographic regions or around particular topics, is the better chance we have of tackling the problems together. Because it's just not something that can be solved in silos or in isolation. It has to be done with a spirit of sort of collectivity, community organizing, solidarity. So I'd say let's turn to each other and work on it together.
I know I've said this a lot on The Fix over the years, but every episode highlights the all too familiar fact that gender inequality really is everywhere. Whether it's in the arts, sports, business, media, or technology, every sector has its challenges when it comes to valuing men and women equally. Advancing equality in the technology sector is particularly important, given that this sector touches on almost every aspect of our daily life. Given the work I do with UN Women, I wanted to encourage individuals and organizations to check out our gender innovation principles at the gicc principles.org. These principles provide step-by-step guidance that anyone can use to take a more gender-responsive approach to innovation and include women, both as innovators and end users. Thank you so much for tuning into our episode today. If you haven't already, please sign up to our weekly newsletter at thefixpodcast.org. On the site, you can also submit a pitch to be featured on the show or to partner with us. Also, if you want to support our work, which is all voluntary, please follow us and leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening to our show, and I'll catch you guys again next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.